Yes, hello.
Welcome to Dr. Zoe Today, where the topics are real, raw, and relevant about business, entertainment, and relationships. Warning, do not listen to this show if you are sensitive to controversial issues or easily offended. Dr. Zoe and her guests are not to be held liable for any shock, pissing of the pants, sudden desire of change, or uncontrollable laughter. Now, here's your host, Dr. Zoe.
And welcome back to the show. Tonight's guest just launched his 7th season of his hit show on MTV, has an amazing story, has had a successful documentary film, and is one of the most genuine, real, raw, relevant people on television today. So he's the perfect guest for Dr. Zoe Today, Neve Shulman from Catfish. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Zoe, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Great.
Hi. So first of all, congratulations, season 7 of the show on MTV. That's awesome.
The funniest part is it's still considered season 7. This is actually the 4th sort of chunk of season 7. Season 7 was a 40 episode, so they aired it in 4 sections. So it's
Wow. It's
kind of like season 8/9 and 10.
40 episodes? Is each season that long?
Usually they order 20 and then they air them sometimes in sets of 10.
All right, so how many shows have you done? Do you know how many shows you've done?
I can't remember the exact number. I think after this, we've now done like close to 150.
Wow, that's a lot. That's a lot. And congratulations on your new baby boy that was born in the beginning of the year.
That's right. I'm looking at him right now. He's hanging out with me. If he gets a little fussy, you know, I might have to pick him up and you'll hear him squirming.
It's all good. It's all good. And this is just second child with your awesome
This is number
wife, Laura.
Two. Yes.
Yes. And Cleo is 2 years old now, right? Is
Cleo's
that correct?
2 and a half. That's correct.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. So how
or if, that... or if you asked her how old she was, she would say, I'll be this many, and she holds up 3 fingers. So she's already
awesome.
Preparing for her 3rd birthday.
Yeah, that is awesome. So what I want to do today is let's back up a little bit for a minute and hear kind of your backstory. So where did you grow up?
Sure. Oh, wow. So I grew up in New York City.
Okay.
I lived for just a few years before that in the suburbs as a infant. But pretty much my whole childhood, adolescence, young adulthood, and 20s was spent living in New York City in Manhattan.
Okay. And what did your parents do for a living, like when you were growing up?
My dad is a real estate broker and has been sort of helping people buy and sell their apartments in New York for my whole life. And my mom has done many things. When we were younger, she actually studied filmmaking, interestingly. She was sort of the first in the family. But she didn't really pursue that as a career. She just did it for fun. And then she worked at Sotheby's a little bit. She was a florist and ended up being an event planner for many years.
Cool.
I got my first entree to the world of events. And in college, my brother, what did I say? And,
your
did
first
I say that wrong?
Entree. No, that's
oh,
fine.
Okay.
I like that verbiage. That's cool.
Yeah.
All right.
So my brother and I actually started a videography and photography company in the early 2000s that ended up being like 10 years of my life making, you know, wedding videos, bar mitzvah montages, corporate event, sort of promotional films. So that was sort of how I got into doc-style filmmaking and events and things like that.
So is he your only sibling, or do you have other siblings as well?
He's my full brother, and then when I was younger, my mom remarried to a lawyer, and he had a daughter from a previous marriage, so I have had a stepsister most of my life, so I consider, you know, myself one of three.
Awesome. Okay, so let's fast forward a little bit. So how old are you when you start talking to this girl, Megan, and how did come about?
By the way, I love your intro that you said, in addition to my hit TV show, I've made a successful documentary. I thought that was funny.
Yes.
Just because, unfortunately, very few documentaries end up sort of earning the label successful. But
true.
I don't think that that makes it any more or less important than any other documentary.
Yeah.
However, anyway, so the whole thing with Catfish started in 2006, I think it was, or maybe it was 2007. I can't remember because it was like the end of one of those years. And I was, I think I was 24 at the time.
Right, so you met this chick on Facebook? Is that...
Well, so
technically
it was MySpace.
Okay. Ooh.
And
MySpace.
I got a message on MySpace from a random person, and I hadn't used MySpace in months, and so I got like an email through MySpace that I got had a message waiting for me, and I went and logged in, and I had this message
for all you millennials listening, because my age demographic is like 16 to 22.
Oh,
MySpace is kind of like your Snapchat. It was like our Snapchat. Like MySpace was like the first like really cool social media to have. And now it's like an antique. But anyway, go ahead, Neve.
I would just say MySpace was like a sort of version one of a Facebook kind of.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I had a message from a girl. And in this case, it was actually a very young girl. It was like an 8-year-old girl who had, I think, logged on to her mom's account or her older sister's account or something, and had sent me this message just letting me know that she's a big fan of ballet, and she saw that I do a lot of photography of ballet, and I guess she discovered my website where I had lots of photos of mine that I'd posted, and wanted to know if I thought it was okay if she used my photos as the subject for her art. Because she was learning how to paint and wanted to paint dancers. So I, of course, said yes. I thought it was charming. And then, of course, I asked about, you know, who could I correspond with on her, you know, on her end of things that was of age. And so I immediately got a message back from her mom. And so I felt much more comfortable about talking to her. And the whole family was very excited and appreciative that I was taking the time to kind of encourage their daughter or sister in her art making. So that's kind of how it all started.
Okay. Megan was the relative of one of the relatives.
Megan was the older sister of Abby, who was the young girl.
Okay.
And my relationship, and so the reason that I think this all kind of happened as passionately and kind of quickly as it did was because that was right at the exact moment that Facebook was sort of really becoming popular. So all of these people that I was talking to who lived in sort of northern Michigan were just then getting on Facebook, and they were all excited to sort of make and add friends. And so I became one of all of these people's friends. You know, Abby had her older sister and her brother and her cousin and her mom and the babysitter and the cousin, you know, like all these people in the UP were friending me, and I very quickly kind of got wrapped up in their fun, interesting, and very different life since they all kind of lived in the country, and I was a city kid, and we just became friends.
Part, like, kind of starts, and how long do you talk to, quote-unquote, Megan? Like, how long were you guys interacting before the truth got revealed?
Well, so the relationship with the older sister, Megan, was a very sort of slow burn at first. She was just very friendly and appreciative again that I was being so supportive. And then when she was sort of the last to get on Facebook, and when she did and I saw her, I said, wow, this girl's really pretty. And I had already established a friendship with her, so it kind of felt like there could be something there.
Yeah.
So we started flirting and then talking on the phone. And I think it probably was a few months before we planned to meet up for the first time. She was going to come down to New York with Abby and stay with my parents, and we were going to go to the ballet, and I had a whole plan for the weekend. But then on the way down, their car broke down, and Abby got car sick or something. You know, it kind of just wasn't meant to be. I was going to fly up there, but that didn't work out because Abby's dad wanted her to come to his house for that week. Whatever. There was a million reasons why I couldn't meet up with them. But eventually, without getting into too much detail, my brother and Henry, who's his friend and co-director in all of their film projects, they'd kind of noticed that there was this relationship percolating between me and these people and decided to document it. And eventually they said, like, Neve, you know, this is crazy. We should just go there and find out who these people really are. Mm-hmm. Because a few of the things they had told us hadn't checked out. And so that's what we did. We flew to, where did we fly to? Chicago, I think, and then drove like the 8 or 9 hours up to the
wow.
DC. And just sort of showed up at their house.
Wow. Yeah. And so then it's revealed that
we should at least give a spoiler warning. I mean, if you haven't seen the documentary about
yeah,
my experience,
I think most people have.
Young people haven't.
Really? So
most
they just
people,
are like fans of the show, but they haven't
right.
really seen
and
the
then
documentary.
They don't even know why I'm the host of the show. They're just like, oh, you're just the guy who hosts the show. They don't realize that it happened to me and
yeah.
that's why I make the show.
Yeah.
So if you haven't seen the film and you don't want to know what happens, then I guess just skip for a few minutes ahead. And if you, you know, want to hear and talk about it, then, you know, here we go.
Yeah.
But anyway, so yeah, we get to the front door, and over the process of the next few days, it becomes clear that the community of people I've been talking to didn't exist and were mainly the sort of creative invention of this woman, the mother who I had been talking to, and her daughter Abby does exist, but I hadn't communicated with Abby or Megan or any of these other 14 people. It was all this one woman who had created all the accounts.
Oh my goodness.
And emails and all of it.
Who has time for this stuff? Who has time for this stuff? It's crazy. 14 accounts. I mean,
it was a lot. I mean, they weren't all super active, but yes.
Yeah,
when you live
personalities
in,
and people,
right.
and when you live in bumfuck Egypt, still, I mean, you have a family, you have things to do, right? Like, you got to cook dinner, you got to do this, you got to do that, you got to clean your house, you got to, like, you know, go to the grocery store. You still got to do stuff. You got to earn a living. Like,
well, what's amazing is that this woman does a lot of other stuff. And in fact, what made the story so interesting and heartbreaking and just captivating is that she's the primary caretaker for her husband's kids, who he had from a previous relationship, who she met when they were like 2 or 3 years old, and they're severely handicapped and developmentally, you know, challenged. So they, when I met them, they were 19-year-old twins, but needed complete full 24-hour care, still in diapers, needed to be bathed.
That's a lot.
And one of them is tube fed. I mean, so she took on the responsibility of becoming the sort of stepmom and nurse for these kids. And as a result, totally forfeited her own sort of ambitions and hopes and dreams for what her life in the potentially creative arts world could be. And so any spare moment that she had when the kids were not, you know, didn't need her or her daughter was asleep, she would go upstairs to this little sort of art studio room that was in the attic of their house, and she would dream and she would paint and she would fantasize about a life that she knows she'll never have. And it didn't intend to be a relationship with me, but she saw my photography and she liked it and she wanted to feel a connection to the sort of culture of New York City. And so we started talking and I think she got wrapped up in it. I'm a somewhat charming guy. And I guess it just kind of went from there.
Just a little bit. So do you talk to Angela now still?
I haven't. I talked to her on and off for a while after the film came out, and I actually invited her to be a part of the show when it first started, but she chose not to be. And it's been a few years now since I spoke to her last.
Okay. All right. So let's talk about, how did the show come about? Did you guys pitch it to MTV, or how did that happen?
Yes. So the show came about because after the documentary was at Sundance, pretty much right after, I started getting emails and Facebook messages from people saying, oh my God, you know, I heard you had this thing happen to you where you were talking to someone on the internet who turned out to be someone they totally different. That happened to me. I never told anybody. I've been embarrassed. Or I think that's happening to me now. What do I do?
Yeah.
And so I, of course, didn't have an answer, but it was very clear that I was not the only person who was dealing with this sort of thing.
Right.
And so we all kind of put our heads together and just said we should figure out a way to tell these people stories and help them do what I did, which is go and meet and find out who they're talking to. And so, yeah, we pitched it to a few different networks. MTV was the most excited.
Yeah.
And the rest is sort of history.
Yes. Awesome. So you've had the show for so long and the documentary, Sundance, awesome, successful. Have you ever thought about taking it to the big screen, like pitching it to a production company and taking like your four craziest cases and having actors and actresses, because everybody loves you, so you've already got those connections, like to be in a movie and have it on the big screen, dude? Have you ever thought about that?
I have not actually thought about that.
Yeah, that would be awesome. That would be awesome. Like Universal, even Netflix now is putting out like major productions and they're like hot. I have a lot of clients in LA, but anyway, we'll talk about that later. So Neve, you deal with a lot of shady people and you go to a lot of places. Do you ever get scared for your safety?
I don't really, which I think some people might think is foolish. I think maybe I don't have certain brain connectors that create fear in social settings.
Okay.
But also, you know, I like to think of myself as a pretty street smart guy. I grew up in the city. I'm not afraid of confrontation.
Yeah.
And I think that the people who come on the show, whether they're the sort of hopeful who we're helping or the, quote, catfish who we're sort of searching for, are on the show because for the most part they are passive people who have relegated themselves to internet relationships.
That's true.
So they're not really like aggressive people.
They're hiding.
Now that doesn't mean that I might not knock on a wrong door and have somebody like, actually that's not true. I was scared recently, actually, this season. I was doing an episode with Elle King, who's a really cool singer, and we went to an address that we thought might be where the person was, but we had to literally sneak into this apartment building complex, and I knocked on this random door, and some dude opened it, and I could tell right away he did not know who I was, and I was some, you know, strange person kind of bothering him in the middle of the day, and I did kind of clam up and I got a little nervous and I was like, okay, thanks, bye. And I left.
Okay. So I personally, when I watch the show, it's like my guilty pleasure. I DVR it and have it on in the background when I'm multitasking. And I personally am like, ooh, Neve, like don't knock on that door. So if I feel that way when I'm watching, what about your wife, Laura? Does she ever have concerns about your safety?
Oh, I think she's probably hoping something does happen to me.
Come on. Like,
no,
what?
I don't think so. I mean, I think she knows that. I mean, look, there's always a chance something could happen, but I'd say there's just as much, if not more of a chance that I could step out of the – across, you know, step into the street tomorrow and get hit by a car than like something happening to me on the show. Because at least on the show, I've got, you know, the crew with me.
The camera crew, right.
Yeah, I mean, I'm like...
And you guys have security too? Do you have security as
well?
We
have security when the two people meet, because we never know what one of them might do or how they'll react.
Yeah.
So we have someone there to just make sure that like nothing happens.
Yeah.
But there never really has been an issue that warranted, you know, needing like a real security guard. And so cross my fingers, so far, so good.
That's awesome.
Right.
You're really diplomatic. You're positive. You handle people very well. So I deal with a lot of different personalities, a lot of different people. And, you know, and I feel like it comes kind of natural to me, and I've been doing it so long. So with you, do you feel like it's natural that, because you're really, like, I call myself a chameleon. Like, I can kind of relate to anyone and get on anyone's level and kind of pull them into the light. No, I'm just kidding. But like with you, like I see the way you deal with people, all walks of life. Chat fishing doesn't discriminate. You've been in the ghetto, you've been in the trailer park, you've been, you know, with all different kinds of people, very diversified group of people. So does that come naturally, or do you feel like that's from growing up in New York, or
I think it definitely comes from growing up surrounded by many different walks of life. But I think I've two things. One is obviously just from doing the show. I mean, I look back at earlier seasons and I think I've come a long way from there. And I've picked up a lot of knowledge and perspective and language. So I definitely think I've improved as we've made the show. But also mainly the thing that I use as a way to sort of relate to and connect with people is just the simple reality that I myself have made a lot of mistakes. I've done a lot of dumb shit.
We all have gotten a lot
of trouble, and I've hurt people and I've hurt myself. And like, I know how that feels. And I think if we can all admit that we have made some sort of mistake, whether the mistake is allowing ourselves to be catfished or the mistake is catfishing someone else and that we've hurt them or ourselves, like we can always all relate in that very simple, basic sort of human way.
Right.
And so I try to find a path to get just to that simple, you know, connective issue.
Humanity. Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. And doing this show, I mean, has it made you more jaded when it comes to humanity? Because, like I said, you deal with a lot of crazy people. And, you know, or has it made you more hopeful? Like, you know, I mean, sometimes, you know, I say all the time, it's really hard for people this day and age. I shouldn't say all people, because there's all positive. There's so much good, and when we focus on the positive and the enlightenment that's happening, and like people are more woke than they've ever been, but also people are having a really hard time keeping the cuckoo in the clock. We're in a very overprescribed, you know, society right now, and everybody kind of has a label, and, you know, hey, like, you know, like a lot of people are on medication and stuff. But when you're out there and you're doing this, has it kind of made you a little bit more jaded, or has it given you more hope when it comes to humanity?
I've had the experience that wherever I go, no matter what type of place it is, what the socioeconomic background is, geography of it, I find that people are, at least the ones that I come across, and I understand my experience is different because I'm a straight white guy and I'm on TV, so people generally kind of show me their best side, which I'm very aware of. But nonetheless,
I don't know, Neve. You've seen some bad sides too of some people, which is cool because you work
through it.
Yeah.
Right. But I don't even necessarily mean the people on the show. I just mean in general, my travels around the country for the last 7 years to many, many different towns that you've likely never heard of, that are hours from the nearest sort of major airport, you know, or very much sort of the flyover states.
Yeah.
And I find that people are, like I said, for the most part, all really the same and want the same things and want to be happy and are polite and friendly. And it's confusing to me when which is all the time, you know, hear sort of in the news how everybody's so angry with each other and there's two sides and there's this like civil war happening. I'm just like, what's the problem? I understand people have issues. Some, you know, education's an issue, jobs, I get it. But like, for the most part, we can all help each other and be nice to each other. Okay. And it seems strange to me that like I guess the answer is that I'm hopeful. Because I do think that while there's a lot of side effects to the current state of
our country,
sort of, you know, our country and beyond mm-hmm. that, just sort of social,
the leadership,
the social experience.
All of it, yeah.
Well, yeah, I'm not even trying to get into it. I'm just meaning like the world is what it is. The internet, the cell phones, like whatever, our present day situation, while it does have some negative side effects, I do think has a basis for improvement and general happiness, but it, you know, it will take some sacrifice and some commitment and some hard work. But I do believe people are inherently good and that we can work together to do that.
I love that. Because I feel like even the most evil, like, you know, and you deal with it. And even, you know, when you devoted your life to make a difference in people's lives, and you definitely are, I know what I do for a living, I'm making a difference. My motivation when I was younger was all about the dollar and how many millions can I make. But now it's more like I'll walk away from deals that are millions and millions of dollars to do something that aligns with me, that feels right. And, you know, I turned my life around. I have a very volatile past, you know, and I, 20 years ago, totally turned my life around for the good. So I know if I can do it and build the empire that I've built with my company, that anyone can do it as a single mother with three children, three different colors, one out of a marriage, one out of a rape, one out of just fun. So,
right.
Full, you know, took full responsibility, not a dime of child support, you know, and, you know, I just, my story is crazy. So I know if I can turn my life around like I have and, you know, have a steady level of success and maintain that success, that anybody, no matter where you've been, it doesn't matter where you've been, it only matters where you go from here. But it's still like people don't understand that when they do something evil, and I'm going to talk about something relating to you, like the silly allegations of sexual, you know, advances, you know, of someone that was on your show, like people don't realize that there's a ripple effect, but not only is there a ripple effect that affects the person, their family, their career, but also the karma that they're sowing for themselves is so, you know, negative. So when somebody does something like, you know, to lash out, like you've experienced, like I've experienced, I had a webmaster that worked for me, and, you know, New Year's Eve, he was at one of my parties, and we kind of like, I drink like twice a year, and I have the mirror popping bottles. I don't drink. I don't like to drink. And so I'm a lightweight. And then we ended up kind of messing around a little bit. And then when I didn't, like, you know, go to his advances after that, he couldn't take the rejection, and he ended up like totally setting this whole thing up to hack my site and cause a lot of, but that didn't just affect me. That affected my children. That affected my career. That affected the 40 plus people that work for me. That affected my clients. So when people do something like this person that put this out there, I mean, I know you know, they had to take a break from the show because of it, you know, until it was cleared up. How do you handle stuff like that? How do you personally handle stuff like that? Because I know you're really positive.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough. You never know what people can and will say about you. I found that the sort of end result for me was overwhelmingly positive. Because while yes, it was unfortunate and it sort of derailed a number of plans and projects that I was very excited about, it also sort of overwhelmingly showed me that the people who I do work with, who do know me, and others from my past, you know, backed me up and said, "This is silly. This is not the guy we know and who we work with," and it became very clear very quickly that that's just not the case. So, so in a weird way, I feel that it sort of became a badge of honor for me to say, like, look, you know, you can come at me, you can say whatever you want. If I were a scumbag and if I had done terrible things, to people in the past, this would have been the perfect opportunity for everyone to say, you know what? What an asshole.
Me too.
Right.
Like, do you think this individual was just looking for attention? And it was kind of like last year. So when the whole Me Too thing was coming out, was it just like her way of trying to like jump on the bandwagon of that? Like, just briefly, your perspective on that.
I've already spent too much energy trying to figure out why she would say something of that sort. But I'm not mad at her. I'm actually mostly curious, I think the way that you are, to know what it was that she did or didn't want. And I don't even necessarily discredit her experience. I mean, look, it was years ago. She remembers something a certain way. I obviously remember it very differently, along with everybody else who was there. But it was her experience. And I'm no less supportive of the Me Too movement than I was before that happened, or than I could be ever, because
That's
still
a whole
important.
Different. I was just using it
no,
as
no,
an
of course.
Example.
No, but I mean, like, I really believe that, like, it's important that she expressed herself, whatever her motives were, and that if there was a, you know, just cause to investigate, which there was, that like there's a due process, and I really think women, whether she was consciously lying or just sort of had the experience strangely twisted in her head, she deserves to be heard, and her story should be respected, and her experience should be valued, and like that's fine. But you're right, it does have a huge ripple effect that unfortunately, you know, I have to deal with.
You know what's awesome? The most important thing that you said is that that you've forgiven. And I think the bigger message here, no matter what you've been through with anyone, like everybody has disappointments and discouragements in life. Everyone does. No matter if it's a business deal, it's a relationship, it's, you know, whatever, your parents, whatever it is. But when we let go, when we truly just leave it in God or the universe's hands and we let go of it, you know, the universe takes care of that. God takes care of that in his time. Like, we don't have to, when we forgive, we're the ones that are free. When we don't forgive, that's what causes us the bondage. And I also love what you said, that you've already spent too much time and energy, like, just trying to figure out why. Because sometimes we mull over things in our head and we try to figure out people's motives. And then we just have to understand that it is their perspective, and they have their own set of issues or perspectives. So I love what you said. Thank you for even talking about that. I had to bring it up. You know, I just, you know, I was curious of how your perspective was on that, and thank you for that. So back to the show. This season, what can we expect? Like, is there anything different? Like, and I can't believe 40 episodes in one season. That is crazy. But what is there anything new or different that your viewers?
Yeah, for sure. So one of the things that I love about the season is similar to the previous sort of chunks of episodes. We have some really awesome guest co-hosts. We sort of thought we would find a permanent one by now, but we ended up just liking different people and the experience of having different people that we've continued to let sort of rotational co-hosts come in. And we have some new ones this season that I love. So that's one thing that's great. And then there's just a lot of new stuff that happened this year. In addition to some different locations, some, you know, that are more exotic, if you will, or just sort of far away, which was an added element of the journey to get there. So that's one thing. We also dealt with some issues, whether it was sort of questionable criminal activity or general just sort of like local news mystery around people or previous things that had happened in their lives. There's been a lot of new dynamics that happens.
Yeah, that's awesome. What episode so far has been the most shocking for you personally?
Wow. It's hard to answer that, mainly because we did so many. I almost can't keep them all straight in my head. If you show me a photo of the people, I can immediately remember everything. But when it's all sort of jumbling around in there, it's hard to separate, you know, different things from each other.
Okay. So from a business perspective, because I'm a businesswoman, so you, like I said, you've got, you know, the successful documentary, you have the show now for so long. Like, what's the vision for the future with Catfish, the franchise? Is there, you know, I mean, like, what about starting like a 12-step program for catfishes or having an HBO, like, you know, section of it for people that like Bumble, Plenty of Fish, Tinder? I mean, I counsel people confidentially for a living, and you wouldn't believe the stories I've heard about, like, you know, like a straight male, like going and showing up. He thinks he's meeting a girl, and there's a guy on all fours tied up, like, just have sex with me. And he's like blindfolded, and he's like, just have sex with me and leave. I won't tell anyone. Like, how scary is that? Like, crazy, crazy stuff. Or like, even like Zeke Thomas, like, you know, what happened to him? And I saw him on your show, and I was like, I love Zeke. I want to have him on the show. And he was on our show talking about his experience. Like, what's the vision? Is it just to continue doing the show on MTV, or are you going to expand?
Yeah, well, I think for now, I'm happy making the show kind of as it is.
Yeah.
Because while the format has stayed the same, people are changing. You know, the way that we interact constantly changes. The way that we use the internet constantly changes. And, you know, the generation of people who I had on the show when we started is totally different now. It's almost 10 years later, and there's just a new generation of people who are growing up online and learning how to be themselves, but also, you know, meet other people. So I think there's plenty more stories to tell and conversations to have and people to help with Catfish as it is on MTV. I'm obviously working on lots of other things. And one of the projects that I'm most excited about is the Facebook show I have with my wife called We Need to Talk. We've done 3 seasons of that. It's done really, really well. Hoping to do more. And also looks like we're going to actually do a live stage version. Because basically what the show is each episode we talk about a different topic that has to do with relationships. You know, whether it's starting relationships and dating, or, you know, committing to someone and moving in, how to deal with their parents if they don't like you, or if their friends and your friends don't get along. I mean, so it's like all the different things that come with short or long-term relationships.
Awesome. I love that.
And so we're going to actually do a live version of it in LA next month. And we're going to have some special guests and some comedians and musicians. And it's going to just sort of be a love/relationship themed variety show. So I'm really excited if that goes well to hopefully do that on a bigger scale.
That is amazing. And that is, what is the name of it? And it's Facebook Live, right?
Like, yes, it's on Facebook Live.
Watch.
It's not
Watch.
Live.
Okay.
It's a Facebook Watch show. It's called We Need to Talk.
I need to check that out. I wasn't aware of it. All of you listening need to check it out. And I love your wife how perfect. You guys are just like amazing couple. She has such a good, like, you have this, like, very positive, like, great aura and energy. And then she's just, like, the perfect compliment. And you guys are adorable. We're going to take a quick commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to answer a few of your questions for Nee from Catfish.
Dr. Zoe has been a successful entrepreneur, philanthropist, and the confidential coach to celebrities, leaders in business, religion, and sports for over a decade. Take advantage and submit your questions on love, sex, and relationships via the Dr. Zoe Today app, drzoetoday.com, or simply hashtag Ask Dr. Zoe on Twitter. Be sure to tune in every week to hear your questions answered by Dr. Zoe and her guests. Your connection for pop sexuality.
Okay, we've got a few minutes to take a few of your questions. Jason wrote in, and he said, how do you choose which people you're going to help on the show?
So, Jason, that's a great question. I am not directly involved in the selection process because my experience helping these people is totally, I don't know what the right word is, but it's happening in real time on the show. I haven't met them. I haven't heard their story. I like the experience of reading the email for the first time on camera and really having an opportunity to react and respond authentically. So we have a team of people who go through the many emails and website submissions. And I think from what I understand, you know, 70 or 80% of them are not necessarily requests to come on the show, but just sort of people looking for advice or help with different issues relating to internet, you know, relationships. Mm-hmm. And then a bunch of the other ones are either people goofing around or who are not very serious, or
yeah.
people who have said like, oh, I'm 16 and I just met this really hot guy 3 weeks ago and I want to meet him because I'm in love with him. And that's nice, but like, that's not really the stories we're looking to tell.
Yeah.
You know, so we're the people that choose are going through the applications, trying to find stories that are meaningful, that have real emotion and circumstances baked in to them. And then, of course, there's a whole process of actually contacting those people and availability and
yeah.
you know, that everybody who comes on the show has to first speak to a psychiatrist to make sure that they are, you know,
ooh, that's
okay.
Good.
Yeah, no,
yeah.
Make sure that they're okay being on television and potentially, you know, being ridiculed or made fun of, and that they're strong enough to handle that and not, you know, potentially do something harmful to themselves or someone else. So it's a long process, but we try to do it as efficiently as we can so that we can get a story email that comes in and as you know, within weeks, hopefully go and actually film that episode.
Okay. Sabrina wrote in and said, I was recently catfished after online dating for a year. I can't seem to get back out there because I don't trust anyone now. What would be your advice, Niamh?
Oof. Well, I think trust is not something kind of relegated to getting catfished. I mean, I hear a lot of people, young people especially, talk about having trust issues, which I never really totally understood. I thought about it, but I think there's an interesting thing that happens where, because we've all lived now and grown up with social media, and we put so much of ourselves out to the public,
yeah.
and we're so vulnerable and easily sort of searchable, and I think we long for something more private and personal in our lives, and sometimes these catfish relationships fill that void. Because it's just for us. It's not someone that we know or that anyone else we knows. And so I think for Sabrina, this relationship you were having, you probably should have known sooner or even maybe did know in your gut that this wasn't going to work out. But you let it happen because you found some meaningful connection with this person, and this privacy that you had with them and meant something to you. And so I like to think that that's an important dynamic that people can often have either with a close friend or with a therapist. And so maybe what you were really doing was, you know, you found an outlet to express yourself that was safe. And you should not think about it as like getting lied to or now every relationship you go into is going to end badly. But find a healthy way to have a relationship like that. And then just put yourself back out there and date people. And like, look, it's going to happen. You could have met someone and dated them for a year and then found out they had another family somewhere else.
Yeah.
It would have been just as devastating.
That's so true. That's
there are
true.
Lots of good people out there. And I think if you make yourself available, but you know what you need and what you don't need and what you want and don't want, then you'll be much more likely to find success.
Yes, that's awesome advice. I love it. Thank you so much for being on the show, Niamh. And to all my listeners, tune in next time for real world relevant information on business, entertainment, and relationships.
And